Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning, 6:04. Welcome to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. I'm honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8. As we connect faith to life, it's still October. Yes, indeed it is. And we are still celebrating Pastor Appreciation Month, all month long. Details on how you can participate in that. Some more details on that coming up a little bit later this hour. Also, later this morning, we're pleased to welcome to the program Dr. Richard Furman. Dr. Furman is a vascular surgeon. He has over 30 years of experience saving lives and addressing problems that kill Americans. He's got a new book out called Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Living Longer and to Live Younger. I'm curious to know what that means, to live younger, but we'll ask a medical doctor about that coming up later this morning. Also, our great friend Kim Cotola. Kim Cotola, host of the Cradle My Heart program. That happens Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. She is a national advocate for the unborn, Kim is, and she also speaks to the hearts and minds of women and men after abortions have already happened. She is very candid and very thoughtful and very honest about acknowledging that as much as we want to say that, abortion is legal and, it's life. If you're listening last hour, by the way, to the Living on the Edge broadcast with Pastor Chip Ingram, boy, did he have some interesting statistics that he was citing, some interesting data from abortion advocacy groups here in the United States of America, like Planned Parenthood. And Planned Parenthood kind of no longer trying to pretend that life in the womb is something less than a life. I mean, it's most people agree, yes, it is a life. And if we agree that the taking of that life is okay, well, that has all kinds of implications. But the lives that get left behind after an unborn child is removed from the womb and the life is terminated, women and men and the other adults in the room, so to speak, their lives are turned upside down. Kim Cotola addresses that, and she's got some very interesting things to say about, some thoughts about abortion and racism in America. That'll be about an hour from now, and that's a pretty loaded combination of controversial issues, but Kim Cotola will sort that out for us coming up after the news at 7 o'clock. So stand by for all of this and more. We have sort of I don't use this metaphor lightly or glibly or flippantly, we have somewhat of an elephant in the living room, if you will. There was a terrorist attack in the nation north of us, and if you're listening to us on our Fargo broadcast radio affiliate, you may be very well listening in the province of Manitoba. We have listeners in the Winnipeg area, and our broadcast signal from Fargo, North Dakota, booms into parts of the Manitoba province. And there's no way around it. There was terrorism on our continent, a terrorist act yesterday. And this is the second such incident within the last few days. Now, in just a moment here, I'll let you hear a couple of remarks made by the Prime Minister of Canada. Prime Minister Stephen Harper is his name. And my friends, my fellow Americans, we cannot ignore this any longer. I worry that we are in severe denial here on the North American continent. September 11, 2001 was oh so long ago, and the past president, our previous presidents, previous regime last decade and whatnot, they did what they did, and they did it all wrong, and everything's good now. There is no longer a war on terror. There's no problem here, and except that none of that is true. We had a beheading of a U.S. citizen in the state of Oklahoma, of all people, as recently as, 4 weeks ago. And notice how quickly that news came and went, and people scarcely remember it now. But terrorism is active, it is here, And we'll talk about it coming up next. We'll go to Winnipeg and talk to a media professional there in that fine city, and he'll get us updated on that. That's next here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. It's now 6:08. Our program continues momentarily.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
It's now 6:10 Central Time, and you are listening to the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. We are fully listener-supported. Come on board and join us anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Last night, the Prime Minister of Canada, Prime Minister Stephen Harper, took to the nation's airwaves and to the World Wide Web and spoke to the people of his country. Part one of Stephen Harper noting that there have been two terrorist attacks in their country as of late.
For the second time this week, there has been a brutal and violent attack on our soil. Today, our thoughts and prayers are with the family and friends of Corporal Nathan Cirillo. Corporal Cirillo was killed today, murdered in cold blood, as he provided a ceremonial honor guard at Canada's National War Memorial, that sacred place that pays tribute to those who gave their lives so that we can live in a free, democratic, and safe society. Likewise, our thoughts and prayers remain also with the family and friends of Warrant Officer Patrice Vincent, who was killed earlier this week by an ISIL-inspired terrorist.
Prime Minister Harper went on to say last night to the understandably somber nation of Canada, this should be a wake-up call to all of us. Here's part two.
Fellow Canadians, in the days to come, we will learn more about the terrorist and any accomplices he may have had. But this week's events are a grim reminder that Canada is not immune to the types of terrorist attacks we have seen elsewhere around the world.
Canada certainly is not immune to such things, nor are we here in the United States of America. It's a time to be vigilant. It is a time to be, proactive, but a time to be prayerful as well. Joining us to talk about this from the city of Winnipeg, Jeff Currier, who is a great friend to me personally, but also a very fine professional broadcaster, news analyst, and a talk show host in that city. Jeff Currier, welcome to the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for joining us.
Austin, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Can you add to the information we got there from Prime Minister Harper in terms of what has transpired in two terrorist attacks and what we know about the, I guess, that which motivated them? Can you add to that?
What we're seeing, I think, Austin, and it's been borne out in the United States, too, with in a little bit of a different level. There's three young girls in Colorado recently. But what we're seeing is the increasing level of radicalization of young North Americans, and this is happening in some European nations as well, the UK, France, and so on, of young Westerners into this kind of Islamist jihadist mindset. And there are a lot of people who are writing and commentating about why this process is taking place and how it's taking place. It's something that we're now having to deal with. It became known as homegrown terrorism. Mm-hmm. But that's apparently what we've seen here this week in Canada on a couple of occasions. One in Montreal 3 days ago, where a young man who had been a Quebecer who had been radicalized waited in his car for 2 hours until he saw two members of our armed forces, ran them over. One of them has died. And yesterday, apparently, and we still don't have a whole lot of information, the police are not releasing a ton of information, but it's apparent that yesterday's gunman was also Canadian-born, who apparently was also radicalized and had launched this attack on Canadian Armed Forces personnel and had gone into our Parliament buildings, which is, in fact, it's right across the street from our National War Memorial. Mm-hmm. It's a place called Confederation Square in Ottawa, my hometown. I spent hundreds of hours in that very area.
Right.
And it's essentially right across the street. So he shot this one soldier, ran across onto Parliament Hill, which is a few hundred yards to sprint across, and was just outside the rooms where all our members of Parliament were meeting in the various parties. They call it caucus day, and was within feet of being able to get into these rooms and start shooting. when he was taken down.
Well, and if you want to disrupt a society, if you want to upend a country, I hate to say this, but my goodness, if a whole bunch of a nation's elected leaders all cease to exist all at the same time, that's a great way to plunge an entire nation into chaos. And that's why these security measures...
The government apparently was aware of that. The way our system works here, the Wednesday is what they call caucus day. And that means that all members of parliament and senators as well, now our Senate fills a completely different function than yours does, but it's essentially our members of parliament, and all of the different political parties have what they call caucus day. So the caucus all gets together and they talk about their various policies that week and they have their briefings and their discussions. And it means that virtually all members of parliament are in Ottawa in caucus meetings on Wednesday. So it's clear to me that this government was aware of that. And they knew where these members of parliament were going to be, and it was only because of the quick movement, the level-headedness, and the bravery of a man called our sergeant-at-arms,
mm-hmm.
who was the man who took this gunman down. Now, the sergeant-at-arms is kind of the cop of the House of Commons, and it's a ceremonial position, really. I mean, he's the guy who will carry the ceremonial mace into parliament for major ceremonies and that sort of thing.
Right.
But he was a 29-year veteran of our RCMP. And in all his time, this guy is a guy who provided security for the Queen on her visits. And so I mean, a real pro, a real vet. He had never had to draw his weapon in all of his years of service. Guy now in his late 50s. But it was his cool-headedness and his bravery that saved lives yesterday, because he was the one who took the gunman down.
Jeff Currier is a news analyst and broadcaster in Winnipeg, Manitoba. He's with us on our guest line. We continue with Jeff in just a moment. These are very sobering instances. And by the way, if you think that this is all something that's a problem in Canada and nothing that we have to worry about, here's something that has been completely buried in headlines here in the United States of America. There is yet another to add to the list, another incident. Somebody scaling the walls and climbing over the fence and getting onto the grounds of the White House over the last 36 hours or so. These are sobering times. They are worthy of our attention. We'll continue in just a moment with Jeff Currier. It's now 6:17. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being on our support team. We are fully listeners. Support us. Find us at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. I'm Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. And our guest, Jeff Currier, he is a news reporter and analyst and the host in Winnipeg, Manitoba. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio as we talk about the rather sobering developments over the last few days in the country of Canada. Yesterday, an attack on the nation's capital in Ottawa, Ontario. I would just, again, reiterate this. I'm looking at a news headline here dated yesterday, and this got a scant bit of attention here in the U.S. My goodness, how quickly we kind of tune out the bad news and how quickly our media outlets around the country ignore such things. New White House fence jumper apprehended before reaching residence. Here's the opening couple of sentences here. Only a few weeks after a knife-carrying, fence-jumping intruder made it deep into the White House, Secret Service officials now have apprehended a person Wednesday night who jumped the fence at the White House yet again. This bears close resemblance to what happened at the Parliament building in Canada just yesterday. These intruders, we think these places are oh so safe, but apparently they aren't. And as I said earlier, if we want to see our nation or Canada, the free world, plunged into chaos, this is the way to do it. Jeff Currier, you hit on something very, very important earlier, and it's talked about not openly enough, but it is talked about somewhat here in the U.S. It's increasingly being talked about in the evangelical Christian community across our country, but it's this notion of homegrown terrorism. And you note that this killer at the Capitol in Ottawa yesterday was a Canadian. So are these fence jumpers that have been arrested at the White House from the United States of America. In terms of a solution, is there anything that Canadian society is coalescing around, maybe church communities in Canada? Are they coalescing around a solution to this problem of homegrown terrorism?
Not so far, Austin. I will say that a lot of the imams and the Muslim leaders in Canada are doing their best right now. They may have been a little bit behind the curve, but I think they're doing their best to try to discourage this sort of thing. Typically, you're finding people who are, you know, not unlike the Tsarnaev brothers, guys who don't really fit in, the Boston bombers. But
right.
But a lot of these young guys are, they're people who maybe didn't have a lot of friends in school, maybe they didn't make the basketball team, or maybe they weren't good enough to play in the band, and they didn't have a lot of friends, and they just don't really fit in anywhere, and they become vulnerable to this kind of radicalization. And we're seeing that now, and of course both young Canadian and American young men have gone over to fight with ISIL.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incomprehensible to us to think, and about 3 years ago, there was a group called the Toronto 18, and luckily these people were thwarted, but they had plans to, in fact, attack Parliament Hill. All 18 of these young guys were actually born here into Muslim families. Their families had come here to get away from the very kind of terrorism and extremism that they had somehow adopted along the way, that they'd been radicalized here in Canada without their parents' knowledge somehow, and that's a mystery as well. Luckily, they were stopped and thwarted. But that's the same sort of thing, that these kids had been radicalized here on their own home turf. And it's something that we have to find a solution to, because there are lots and lots of young people out there who aren't on the basketball team, who aren't in the band, or who are loners, who are vulnerable to this sort of thing. It's partly a societal problem. I think there's some theory that some of these people may be folks with some mental health issues who become mm-hmm. vulnerable to this sort of thing. But there's no question that the radicalization and the jihadism seems to hold some sort of appeal for some of these young men. I mean, this guy yesterday wasn't shooting civilians. It was a clear attack on our military personnel, and then he actually hijacked a car and drove the few hundred yards over to Parliament Hill and was intent on wreaking havoc on our system of government. I mean, this was not an attack on individuals, as was the Boston bombing. This was an attack on Canada as an institution, on our way of life. And the Prime Minister pointed that out in his speech.
You're stating it very, very well. Jeff, just a few seconds left. How would you encourage Christians in the United States to pray, not only for your country of Canada, but really for our entire North American continent and our world? The problems you're describing in your country, they are true in our country as well. What would you say?
Well, I think we need to pray for the wisdom of our leaders and for the awareness that we have a problem on our hands. And this is something that I think Canadians have been naive about for a very long time. I think that naivete is going to come to an end now, but the thoughts and prayers of the folks in the United States are extremely important to us. I know that the Canadians still are extremely aware of some of the things that happened on 9/11, and because there were Canadians who were lost that day as well. And the prayers, I think particularly for the two fallen Canadian servicemen this week, are the most important of all, because these are people who died in the service of their country,
mm-hmm.
Ambushed and on their own home turf. And these people, and the people yesterday who saved lives, and there's some video which some of your audience may have seen of these are our security people running towards gunfire while the rest of us are running away.
Yep.
And it's so important to pray for the bravery and the safety of those people and their families.
No greater love is there than somebody who's willing to sacrifice in that way. Jeff Currier, host and news analyst from Winnipeg, Manitoba. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us. Very sobering times. We'll look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Awesome. Thanks very much.
626, this is the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're here. Just ahead, a look forward to our program Connecting Faith, which comes up today at 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. We'll do that next. It's the Faith Radio Network. Connecting Faith happens weekdays at 12 noon Central Time here on our network. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem welcomed George Hoosney to the microphone. George shared an interesting perspective on evangelizing Muslims from his book, Engaging Islam. Let's listen in.
You talk a lot about the boldness is really kind of important for us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost like a trademark of my ministry because we see a lot of fear and a lot of secrecy in missions, which is totally unbiblical in my view. People say, don't post this information. Don't tell people where I am working, what country I'm working at. Don't tell people I'm a missionary. And some of them have even gone as far as to say, we are Muslims. One mission executive told me, I have no problem telling Muslims that I'm a Muslim. Why? Because he interprets in his mind, the word Muslim means submission to God. I say that's deceptive. Jesus was very vocal and very public. He did not fear, even though he had many reasons to fear. He had people trying to trap him and trick him so they could kill him. Many conspired to kill him. They ended up killing him. And he told us, what happened to me will happen to you even more. But when they bring you to the authorities, when they flog you, when they beat you, when they jail you, do not be afraid of them. Do not be afraid of the one who kills the body. So with that teaching in the Bible, why should we be afraid when Jesus says, I will be with you? So we teach that, and we believe that boldness produces much more fruit for the kingdom than being wise. They call it wise, quote-unquote wise. To me, it's timidity, not wisdom.
Well, in fact, you, I think, as I recall, you said that someone who's a Muslim actually appreciates that sort of boldness, particularly in the area of one's personal faith.
Definitely. Boldness is in itself a message that we believe what we are telling you, and we're ready to die for it. If you're not ready to die for Christ, why are you even trying to get people saved? Because especially Muslims, it may mean they die for Christ. And a number of them have faced persecution unto death.
What does that look like, maybe, in a conversation? Obviously, is this just a sort of an initial conversation, or is there does the approach start out in wisdom, or are you sort of bold all the time?
Well, I have been bold even inside Saudi Arabia, North Africa, everywhere I go. But not bold, stupid.
Okay.
Boldness and wisdom go together. You do it in a natural way, not in like you don't get on a ladder in the main street of a city in Saudi Arabia and shout, you're all going to hell, Jesus saves you, and so on. It's ineffective even in the U.S. Bold meaning don't hide who you are.
George Hoosney, being interviewed by Neil Stavem on Connecting Faith just yesterday. Coming up on today's program, Neil welcomes author and pastor's wife, Brandy Wilson, to the microphone as they'll talk about her new book, Leading and Loving It, Encouragement to Pastors, Wives, and Women in Leadership. Connecting Faith, 12 noon Central Time today with host Neil Stavem. It's now 6:31. Good morning and welcome to Thursday. I'm Austin Hill. SRN News on the way next.
Now back to Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
6:35. On this, the Faith Radio Network, fully listener-supported Faith Radio. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your support. Join us anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Still to come, just about an hour away, Dr. Richard Furman, M.D. He's got a new book out called Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger and Longer. And he ties our health and proper care of our physical well-being with our spirituality and our walk with God. That's coming up in just about an hour from now here on the Faith Radio Network. About half an hour from now, our great friend Kim Cotola, who hosts the Cradle My Heart program, Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network, 8 p.m. Central Time. She's got a very interesting topic. Who better to address this one and do it in a gracious and sensitive sort of way? Problems of abortion and racism in our society. Wait till you hear what's going on, I guess you could say, in the community that supports abortion and abortion rights activists. Kim Cotola will address that with us coming up shortly after the news at 7 o'clock here on the Faith Radio Network. And in the midst of all this, it still is Pastor Appreciation Month, and I'll have some thoughts on showing appreciation to our pastors coming up a little bit later this hour. And not only that, before any of this happens, Before we go another step further, please navigate over to myfaithradio.com, our place in cyberspace, and nominate the pastor of your church for a gift. We're giving away, we'll do a drawing, make this fair for everybody, but we're doing a drawing at the end of October, and the winner of that drawing, the pastor who wins, that pastor and the pastor's family will be given the great gift of an 8-day retreat brought to you by Sunscape Retreats. They're a nonprofit group that puts together retreats specifically designed, customized, if you will, for people who serve in ministry, pastors and leaders of lay ministry organizations and those kinds of things. It is restorative. It is refreshing. It enables pastors and pastors' families to work out the bugs, things that plague them. It approaches these matters with the understanding that, hey, clergy, pastors, people who occupy pulpits and lead flocks in the way of Christ, they are only human, just like the rest of us. And they've got flaws and they've got problems, and those problems need to be addressed in a gracious, loving way, as is the case for all the rest of us. Anyway, nominate your pastor. Just get to myfaithradio.com and nominate your pastor. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later in the program. Now, I want to, we've got our phone lines available right now. The number, of course, toll-free, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. I want to pose this question, and you can answer it any way you see fit. But the question, I don't know, I've been contemplating for the last 24, 36 hours or so how to approach this subject, how to word the question. But I guess the best way to word the question is to simply ask this. Have you given up on the United States of America? Are you seeing the trends in our country and our culture and the trends in the world and our nation's role in the world, which is faltering and which is retracting? And have you just thrown up your hands and said, you know, the United States of America is no harbinger, no safe harbinger in a world that's gone awry, and the world is caving in on itself, and our country's doomed. We're so rapidly careening down the wrong road here. I've given up on America. Have you ever felt that way, and do you feel that way right now? I'd like your thoughts on that. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. 2484 is the number. I note, as I raise this question, this is just a little sidebar, but we just played a recorded promo a few moments ago with the voice of Dr. David Jeremiah. Dr. Jeremiah's teaching ministry program airs here on the Faith Network, Faith Radio Network, and you get information about him on our website at myfaithradio.com. And these are what we call public service announcements. Dr. Jeremiah saying, hey, just want to remind you there's an election in our country and we have a civic responsibility to go out and vote. And we've got a lot of people saying that. Yesterday I had some sound bites from former pastor and former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, saying much the same thing. Don't forget to go and vote. We have to let our voice be heard. And those sound bites from Mike Huckabee came to us from our great friend Jeff Rupp at our affiliate radio station, our Faith Radio affiliate in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Mike Huckabee was doing a speaking engagement there in South Dakota, and Jeff Rupp managed to get some one-on-one time with Mike Huckabee and asked him some questions. That was a very important message, apparently, for Mr. Huckabee to articulate to us, get out and vote. Likewise with Pastor Dr. David Jeremiah. Well, why all of a sudden this, hey, go out and vote stuff? Well, the fact is that if you look at the numbers, you look at the statistics, Christians in America have been retracting and declining to participate in elections at a pretty alarming rate. It's not just me who says that. I mean, John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas at Breakpoint, they have been articulating about the very slim slice, very slim percentage of evangelical Christians in America who even cared to vote in the last presidential election. And I kind of got this sense back in early 2013, shortly after the November 2012 presidential election, and this is probably just a few weeks after President Barack Obama's inauguration to his second term. So this would have been late January, early February 2013. I got this pretty clear picture. I had something happen to me. And it's one of those moments where I believed God was conveying something very, very important to me. Now, I want to be very clear. I didn't hear any audible voices, nor have I ever heard what I believe was the audible voice of God. That's not what I mean. But circumstantially, it was a situation, an experience that impacted the way I view the world, the way I view the Christian community in the United States of America. The incident kind of went like this, okay? I have this friend in my hometown, and he called me and he said, I want you to meet this couple. They're visiting from out of town. They've got this really exciting ministry. I want to take you to lunch and have you meet this couple. And they're going to be missionaries in another part of the world. And you may want to come on board as a supporter. Can I get you scheduled for a lunch appointment? You got to meet these people and hear about their exciting ministry. And I said, sure, that's fine. And so I went to lunch and I met this couple for a first time. They were people in their mid-60s. They both were recent retirees. He was a retiree of a U.S. federal government agency. She was a retiree. She retired from a public school district in the state of Maryland in the Washington, D.C. area. And they'd retired from their careers. They had retirement pensions. And they were going to be missionaries on the continent of Asia. And so we sat down over a meal, and I said, well, tell me all about what you're doing. And they explained to me that they had packed up all their belongings, sold most of their stuff, sold their homes and everything else. They were moving relocating permanently, they said, to a particular country on the continent of Asia. And they said, this is what we're going to do for the rest of our lives. And by the way, they made it a point to say, we don't need a lot of financial support to go do our evangelistic work in Asia, because we have these retirement pensions that are fairly robust, and you know, we've got a good retirement thing going, so we don't need a lot of money here, but we are looking for some financial support. And in the context of telling me all these exciting things about their new ministry and this new chapter of their life and what they will do for the rest of their lives, here they are in their 60s, and they're saying, for as long as we have to live, we're going to be spreading the gospel of Christ on the continent of Asia. In the context of all of that, the husband and the wife both sit there and they tell me, and by the way, we're done with the United States of America. We're bailing out of this place. This country of ours that we've always known is going absolutely nuts. And the husband went on systematically explaining all the problems with the country. Now, to his credit, he actually raised the issue of our staggering, disastrous level of government debt at the U.S. federal government level. Didn't even scratch the surface with state government debt and city debt and all that kind of stuff. But he's saying that there's no way our country is going to climb out from underneath this debt. And this man, who, again, just so you understand, he's got a retirement pension, so does his wife, everything's good to go, they don't need a lot of money, they're packing it up, selling the house, selling everything, moving to the continent of Asia, they'll spend the rest of their lives in a foreign land evangelizing the gospel. Because, as he said so eloquently, the gospel is now moving eastward. At the founding of the church, in the early days of the church, emanating out of ancient Rome, the gospel moved westward. Well, historically, we certainly know that's the case. And he's saying the only region of the world, as far as he was concerned, that still had yet to be reached with the gospel was the eastern world. He was going to devote the rest of his life to trying to make that happen and await Christ's return. But in that context, again, he was saying America is doomed. And he says, look what's happened. We've twice elected a president that is one of the most outspoken advocates for abortion. We have twice elected a president who has turned our nation's back on the nation of Israel. He said, those two things alone are enough to cause God to let go of America and for America to lose God's blessing. And he said, this place is going to implode. And I said to this gentleman, I said, well, what happens if our economy collapses and your retirement checks don't come in anymore? And that's when he said, well, no. Well, wait a minute. They have to pay our retirement pensions. They're on the hook for that. And I said, well, but if the whole country just implodes, if it just collapses, doesn't mean people will make good on their commitments. Have you reached that point where you're just giving up on America, like this missionary couple that I was speaking of? 877-933-2484. Let's take a break. We'll come back and get your calls. 877-933-2484. It's 646. I'm Austin Hill. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Great to have you with us. The Faith Radio Network is on, and I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning, 6 till 8, where we connect faith to life. Our number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Kim Cotola, host of the Cradle My Heart program, heard Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. Kim joins us shortly after 7 o'clock to talk about the quest for life in America. And that which threatens it, she is got her finger on the pulse of pro-life concerns in our country like none other. 877-933-2484 is our number. My question for you, have you just given up on America? I have noted sporadically in small doses, but even just what has it been, about 4 months, July, August, September, less than a full 4 months, that I've been hosting this morning program, trends in our country, trends across the world, have absolutely been negative. That's not to say that we have lost all hope. That's not to say that what we present on the Faith Radio is all negative. But my goodness, when I first started here, nobody had heard of this this band of thugs called the Islamic State. Since I began this program, we've had multiple attacks on the White House. Just yesterday, we had an attack on the Parliament in Canada involving the killing of a couple of very brave people. And on the same day, this is something just got buried in the American news, we had somebody actually scale the fence again and get onto the grounds of the White House again. I don't know how in the world that happens. I've been to the White House a couple of times. Security at the White House is oppressive. But these things are happening in an attempt to attack the institutions of our country and Canada's as well. And we've seen the country of Iraq just cleansed. I mean, it's not an ethnic cleansing, but a religious cleansing, just the slaughter of Christians in the country of Iraq. There have been a lot of very unfortunate things, very tragic things that have happened all just since the beginning of last summer, quite frankly. Have you given up on America is my question. 877-933-2484. When we hear none other than Dr. David Jeremiah, the prolific Bible teacher that he is, voicing public service announcements here on the Faith Radio Network and other Christian broadcasting outlets around the country, saying, you know, please don't forget to go out and vote and let's not abdicate our responsibility. When we have somebody like him and Pastor Greg Laurie and a former pastor, former Governor Mike Huckabee saying, church, wake up. We have a voice in these kinds of things. When we have incidences where city governments in our country, the city of Houston, the city of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and they're threatening to arrest pastors. For what? For being pastors. When that's going on, I'd like to think that that's a wake-up call for us to get engaged. But as I was describing earlier, I have this experience. Again, this was about a year and a half ago, early 2013. Couple that had retired from their government jobs in the Washington, D.C. area, and they had retirement pensions all lined up, and they were bailing out of a country that they believed had abandoned them. They were abandoning the United States of America. As far as they're concerned, their country that they always lived in had gone down this wicked path, and there was no turning back. God had let go of America. God had taken his blessing away from America, as this gentleman had explained to me, and he said, it's all downhill from here. He literally used that phrase. It's all downhill from here. And I politely, respectfully asked this gentleman, I said, well, what if the economy of the United States collapses, the government collapses, and you don't get your retirement check? That idea had not even occurred to him. He said, well, they have to pay my retirement check. That's a legal obligation. I said, sir, with all due respect, when entities go bankrupt, people to whom the entity owes money, they don't always get paid. I mean, this could happen. My point in bringing that up to this gentleman is that it wasn't seeing things in a holistic way. Some of his logic was a bit flawed. We can throw up our hands and say, well, the collapse of our country, the collapse of civil society, it doesn't affect me. But as we have seen, the functioning of churches, the activity of pastors in Houston, Texas, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, is being impinged upon. And if the economy collapses, nobody escapes that. No matter how rich, no matter how poor, no matter how middle class you or I are, this impacts all of us. Have you given up on America? 877-933-2484. We'll talk more in moments. It's now 6:54 on the Faith Radio Network. On the Faith Radio Network, Live the Promise with Susie Larson. That happens weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time. Yesterday, Susie welcomed relationship expert Dr. Greg Smalley. We talked about building solid marriages. Let's listen in.
If we're not having moments that we're allowing ourselves to be known, well, how quickly that can kill a marriage. And that's why I like that verse. I think it's so true in relationships that our communication is really, it has the power of life or death.
You know, when you think about it, Greg, when Jesus says, you know, your sins I remember no more, and that he sends new mercies to our door every morning. We get new mercies every morning, and that because of his great love, we are not consumed. His compassions, they never fail. All that combined, when you think about if he was the kind of God who reminded us again and again of our past mistakes, we would never be able to get out of bed because it would be so despairing to be constantly reminded and condemned. But he came to redeem us and to save us. And yet in marriage, I would defer to you as the expert here, but what I hear when I'm out on the road.
That's brave of you.
Yeah, I'm just saying that to make you feel good. But anyway, no, but truly though, and I think you and I talked about this a lot on Everyday Relationships, and we saw it in questions, where I think one of the killers of healthy relationship and marriage is bringing up the past. And now we have to bring it up to sort it through so we can resolve it. But not letting your spouse forget all the ways they've messed up, to me, would be a death knell, wouldn't it?
It is. There's a really good, healthy kind of reminiscing when I think about the way the scriptures talk about an Ebenezer. An Ebenezer is when we intentionally notice the way God has shown up in our life or in our relationships. So I think it's really healthy for a couple to have those moments where they're reminiscing on the good, the what they've learned, how God has grown them, the good times that we've had. I think on the flip side, the death part of that is if we're always bringing up the negative, we're bringing up past mistakes. If that becomes our focus, what happens is that it really truly does affect our belief about our spouse. We see them then in such a negative light. Those negative beliefs develop. And I tell you, when couples see each other with such a negative lens, that's a huge, huge red flag in a relationship. Because it doesn't matter what I did, good or bad, if my wife only sees me as bad and keeps bringing up the negative, there's not much I can do, and that will dictate then her belief about me and subsequently how she treats me and even her willingness maybe to exit out of the relationship. So you're right. I think a part of that good life-giving communication is to really guard against bringing up a lot of the negatives that have happened over the years.
Dr. Greg Smalley on Live the Promise with Susie Larson just yesterday. Now, coming up on today's episode, Susie welcomes Paul Coughlin of the Protectors. He's been with us on this program several times. He's the guy who stops bullying in schools. It's Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays 3 till 5 Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:58. It's Thursday morning. I'm Austin Hill. SRN News is next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 7:04 Central Time. Welcome to it. The Faith Radio Network is what you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. So depending on where you're at in our various broadcast service areas, the rain might be moving in. The rain might be moving out. But it is apparently, based on the data that I'm getting here at our studios in St. Paul, Minnesota, at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, it looks kind of unseasonably warm, actually. My goodness, almost tropical. Anyway, glad to have you with us. Thursday morning is underway, and we are still very celebratory. It's Pastor Appreciation Month, all month long during the month of October. And we've got info on how you can begin now showing greater levels of appreciation to the pastor of your church. Just get over to our website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And also nominate the pastor of your church to win a great gift. We'll do a drawing at the end of the month and give away a retreat for the chosen pastor and the pastor's family. 8 days worth of a retreat with Sunscape Retreats, a nonprofit retreat ministry for pastors, ministers, those who serve in ministerial capacities. All the info right there on our website at myfaithradio.com. Do you know somebody in your church that owns and operates a business? I am fond of talking about business and entrepreneurship. If you've ever heard my program on the weekends here on the Faith Radio Network, it's called Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. We draw the correlation, we make the connection between our Christian faith and scriptural truths and work and entrepreneurship and business ownership. The scriptures have enormous, voluminous things to say about economics and business and making a living. And clearly there's a scriptural imperative. For those of us who are able-bodied and able to work, there's a scriptural imperative for us to work and be productive. And but that said, we are asking business owners across the country to weigh in. And if you get to myfaithradio.com, we've got a business owner survey there. If you're a pastor of a church, if there are business owners in your church, would you ask them to get to our website and maybe take 10, 15 minutes at the most out of their day and answer some basic questions? They don't even have to give over any contact info or divulge a whole lot about themselves personally. We're just trying to better understand the challenges and the interests and the needs of business owners. Because as I make the case every weekend on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, as you've heard me talk about here on this program, as we do, I would say pretty uniformly across the board here at Faith Radio, we recognize that small business ownership and operation and the successful operating of small businesses across our country, this is essential to the life of the church, is essential to the life of our economy. Most people are employed at a small business across the United States of America. So take our business owner survey. We'd sure appreciate the feedback. It's all available at myfaithradio.com. Coming up in about half an hour from now, a prescription for life, three strategies to live younger and to live longer. Dr. Richard Furman, MD, he will join us to talk about that. He's got a brand new book out on the issue, and he correlates our physical health, the proper care of our bodies, our stewardship of our health with our spiritual lives. We'll talk about that at about 7:35 this morning. On the way next, Kim Cotola, host of the Cradle My Heart program, Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time. That's when that program is broadcast. Kim Cotola joins us next to talk about problems with abortion and racism. We'll find out what's going on there up next. It's 7:08. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Getting your day started connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
7:09 on this, the Faith Radio Network. Great to have you with us. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings 6 till 8 Central Time as we connect faith to life. Living younger, living longer. We'll talk with medical doctor Richard Furman on that subject coming up in just about half an hour from now. Somebody mentioned the words abortion and racism in the same sentence or even in the same paragraph. Would it even cross your mind that the two issues are correlated? Now, if you get over to Kim Cattola's website, cradlemyheart.org, which we're linking to at myfaithradio.com, indeed the two are correlated in some peculiar way. Kim Cattola, welcome back to our program. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Morning, Austin. How are you?
I am very well, and it's good to hear you. Thanks for joining us at the microphone. Abortion and racism. Wow, those are pretty loaded words, pretty strong words, and they're sort of brought together in the title of a blog post at cradlemyheart.org. What's going on?
You know, it's interesting to me that I think the biggest pushback on this idea that blacks are disproportionately receiving abortions, the biggest pushback on this idea is coming from other African Americans. And the idea is being expounded by African Americans. There is a group of people in the National Black Pro-Life Coalition that has pointed out the fact that while blacks make up about 13% of the population, they have about 40% of the abortions. And they say that that happens because blacks are being targeted by the abortion industry. They point to the racist roots of Planned Parenthood from its inception back in the 1920s when eugenics was a more widely accepted worldview. Mm-hmm. And they say that those practices are being carried out today not to better society but to eliminate people of color, particularly and primarily blacks.
The argument is made, and we've talked about this before, and you are able to pick this apart and decipher this rhetoric better than most, but the argument is made over and over again. Well, you have this mother in impoverished parts of the inner city, and this child, she's carrying a child, yes, but that child won't have much of a life anyway. So the compassionate thing to do is to terminate that life. Is that message being overcome with something more hopeful? Are we seeing a stemming of the tide, so to speak?
Well, the pushback on this question is, you know, don't patronize black women. Black women know how to decide what's best in their own lives. And I'll tell you, one of the things that, this is a very subtle problem, and one of the things that helped me so much to overcome the mindset of abortion, because that's really what we need help with, I think, Austin, especially women who are vulnerable to abortion. We need to mm-hmm. change our thinking about it. And what helped me overcome this was that, you know, if I need an abortion, that's a very different thing than saying, I'm exercising a choice, or a very different thing than saying, God says, choose life. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that, you know, you're patronizing a woman if you say to her, this is not in your best interest to carry out this plan. To overcome that thinking, you have to spread around the accountability. In other words, you know, after the abortion, first of all, I blamed my fiancé, who I felt had kind of kicked me to the curb. Then I became a Christian, and I realized, wait a minute, I was the last line of defense, and it was, you know, my choice. I didn't get up and leave the facility, so then I took all the blame. Well, the healthy thing to do is to say, who all really is accountable? There were people I confided in who supported that. There were politicians who voted to make it legal, which made everybody think it's safe. You know, there were the people who sold me the services and the marketing end of the clinic. And so there's so many people who are accountable. And, you know, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. I don't want to patronize anyone and tell them what choice to make. But those choices don't happen in a vacuum. And I truly believe that there is a racist move afoot to eliminate and diminish the black community through abortion. And I think it's been demonstrated by the people who advanced that idea.
Very interesting. Kim Cattola, she hosts Cradle My Heart, a program Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. She's with us right now. We'll continue with Kim in just a few moments to find out more about this very racially tinged agenda that she's identifying with the abortion advocates among us. Stand by. We'll get to that next. 7:14. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're here. 16 on the Faith Radio Network. Breakpoints with John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas on the way in moments. Kim Cattola, host of the Cradle My Heart program, heard Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. She joins us most every Thursday at along about this time. And this Sunday evening on her program, she'll dive deeper into the subject of abortion and racism. She's suggesting that indeed there is a trend of targeting specific ethnic groups, specifically African Americans, black people, and trying to abort more black babies than maybe children of other ethnicities. Kim, I hope I'm characterizing your position here correctly as I sort of reset and restate the case. What do you say to the person, maybe in your church or my church or anywhere else, who says, you know, this is antagonistic, and this just makes people uncomfortable, this just pushes people away from the gospel. Let's not talk about this because it's uncomfortable and it's controversial. How do you respond to that?
The first thing I would say is I hope you would meet my black friends who have helped me understand this issue. We're going to speak with Catherine Davis this weekend. She's our guest. She's very articulate. She was involved as the minority outreach director of Georgia Right to Life when they mounted a billboard campaign some 4 years ago now. And they simply said, Austin, things like, black babies are beautiful. Some of them, though, in the campaign then depicted a black baby and had a headline that said, too many aborted.
Mm-hmm.
These were considered racist somehow because, again, they accused black women of being pawns in somebody else's game and not, you know, exercising true choice on their own, and that it was patronizing, etc. But, you know, Catherine is post-abortive. I would point them to Dr. Alveda King, who also suffered 3 abortions in her life because of this overriding acceptance in the black community and promotion of abortion, as you said, Austin, earlier, as something women need to protect their economic future. I would introduce them to my friend, Reverend Denise Walker, who weeps not only for her lost 3 children to abortion, but for the millions of missing black children.
For those, again, who say this is just controversial and it's polarizing, I know you've got a lot to talk about. This and more is what we can anticipate coming up Sunday evening, 8 p.m. Central Time, as I understand it.
Yes, we're going to talk with Catherine Davis. Like I say, she will be talking about not only the public health statistics that strongly make the case for their point of view on this, but also some outreach efforts and things that they're doing to try to stem that tide. There's a wonderful new website that they've developed for young black women called Could Have Been Me, and there are some other resources that they've put in play that just support life and support, you know, offering social support is what women need. Yes, we can't just say, well, you're on your own, go ahead and have that baby. We have to offer social support. But the pregnancy help movement is doing that. There are resources that are being mobilized. And so it really is to raise awareness of the social support that is out there for women to make healthy choices for their families and themselves going forward.
Kim, you're saying that there are those powerful forces in our culture who would look at, say, a single black woman who gets pregnant, ends up pregnant. There are those who would say, there really is no choice to make here. You can't be raising a child. This is unfair to you. It's unfair to the child. You need an abortion. While at the same time, the practice, the industry of abortion, is sort of shrouded in this notion that, hey, this is just merely an individual choice. Women have to have this choice available to them. It's just one choice among many. I mean, the pro-abortion movement still shrouds itself in the pro-choice rhetoric. So you're telling us that that which is articulated to us is not really that which is true. It's a very different picture. Is the inconsistency here, pro-choice really means you have to have an abortion? Is that truth getting through to people, do you believe?
Well, I think, you know, they're exposing, the people who are abortion proponents, Austin, are exposing their, I think, bigger agenda with, you know, books like the Katha Pollitt work that's out right now. I think it was reviewed in the Star Tribune. It's been getting Huffington Post, all kinds of national play. The book is titled Pro, and I'm sorry, but I can't recall the subtitle. But, you know, her argument is that, look, we should stop apologizing for this. We should stop offering any reason. It's a societal good. It's always been around, and people need it, and it's viable, healthy family planning. You know, and so there's a brazenness, if you will, that is developing, that people are saying, we're not even going to discuss this. It's fait accompli, and it's none of your business, and you know, you're wrong if you have an objection to it, period. That's where the conversation is going. And at least that's intellectually honest. I mean, you know, trying to cloak it in all these other deceptions has been a problem, I think, too.
To the person who doesn't want to get their hands dirty with public policy debates or even discussions in their community, in their workplace, maybe even not even at their church, they want to remain neutral on this. What would you say to that person? Is there a neutral position that anybody can stake out in our culture right now? Is neutrality, in effect, sort of silence, passive acceptance of abortion? What would you say to that individual?
Well, abortion was mandated legal as a women's rights issue, that a woman has a right to make that private decision with her doctor alone. But Austin, you cannot make what's right something that's inherently wrong. That right was secured at the rights of children to be born, at the rights of men to have a say in the lives of their unborn children. Even in cases of marriage, men have no legal voice. It's been challenged in the courts at least 8 times within marriages. And so it's not a just law. It's wrong, and it's unjust. It's unjust to the children, it's unjust to the men involved, and it harms the women involved. The only ones who benefit are the profiteers in the abortion industry.
I have had some people suggest to me, and I've kind of tended to believe this over the years myself, Kim, but some people have suggested to me that the United States Supreme Court decision, the Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision of 1973, that set this this legality in motion, this whole thing that you're describing here, some people have likened that to another famous decision at the U.S. Supreme Court that was the decision in the Dred Scott case, which the net effect of that was to actually uphold this legal understanding that black people were only, what, 2/3 of a whole person, and so therefore they could be bought and sold as slaves. Eventually that was overturned, and I've had some people say eventually, we don't know how many children's lives will be lost, but eventually people will see the light philosophically, morally, legally, and the Roe v. Wade decision will be overturned. Do you draw a parallel there in your mind?
I do, and I think that the legal experts I speak with, of course, that's not my area, but the legal experts I speak with say it's very difficult, of course, for the Supreme Court to rule against itself, and so what will probably happen is some new case will establish a new precedent.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many things that are happening along those lines, including personhood, having the idea that a baby is a person from conception, another human being. And, you know, when you talk about Dred Scott, Austin, it's absurd to us that we would legislate someone as 2/3 human.
Yes, happened in our country.
We've done the same thing with unborn children.
Yes.
And so I think it has to fall. I don't know by what means, but I believe it has to fall because the truth has to prevail.
The program is called Cradle My Heart. You'll hear a strong dose, a compassionate dose of truth, Sunday evening, 8 p.m. Central Time, from one Kim Cotola and her very special guest. Kim, thanks for what you do. Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to hearing you Sunday evening.
Thanks, Austin. Have a great day.
7:25, it's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. Thursday morning underway. Eric Metaxas and Breakpoints on the way next. Good morning and welcome. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here, weekdays 6 to 8. This is where we connect faith to life. Still to come, more information about the business owner survey that we are carrying out vis-a-vis MyFaithRadio.com and Pastor Appreciation Month that continues through the month of October. Details on that at MyFaithRadio.com as well. I'll tell you more coming up in just moments. So amid all the turmoil in the world, even the uncertainty and some people would call it chaos in our country, the statistics tell us that Americans are living longer. The fact is that if you're into your 60s or 70s, well, you've already lived well beyond any expectations that your parents and grandparents and certainly great-grandparents could have had. But how do we do that amidst a chaotic world where health care is being rationed and people can continue to make bad choices with their diets. Joining us to talk about this, Dr. Richard Furman, MD, with more than 30 years as a vascular surgeon. He's got a new book out called Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger and Longer. Dr. Furman, welcome to the Faith Radio Network. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Austin. Look forward to it.
What exactly does it mean to live younger, longer?
Well, I say after the age of 50, we ought to go by physiological age rather than chronological, because we see some people that are in their 70s that are acting like they're 50 and vice versa. So as you just mentioned, connecting faith to life, the thrust of this is to stay as vivacious and as young physiologically as possible, so we can connect our faith, that we can use that as a stepping stone, as a witness for the Lord. So that's what it's about, is being younger physiologically than your chronological age.
Very interesting. So when people say, hey, 70 is the new 50, or 60 is the new 40, in some cases, according to a person's physiological condition, that actually, in some sense, can be reality.
Oh, it is. I have an 87-year-old friend who still plays tennis three times a week and jogs three or four days a week. So it is. That's something that we can control. And we need to realize that really the quality of our years is much more important than the number of our years. So that's what Prescription for Life jumps at and focuses on. And I think the other aspect of what we need to come across with is that the aging process is dependent upon the health of our arteries, and that's what we center on, to educate the average person about how this happens.
And as a vascular surgeon, a long-standing vascular surgeon, I suspect you've seen it all. You could probably tell us a whole bunch, Dr. Furman, about how many Americans just abuse their arteries and their circulatory vascular system because of the diet that we eat in America. Okay? Give us some insight on that.
Well, the food we eat is one of the primary sources of the cholesterol that builds up in our arteries. And there's a good article that you'll read in Prescription for Life that explains, it's from the journal Circulation, that explains that over half of Americans are going to die because of disease in their arteries, with heart attacks or stroke, and that food is a primary cause of this. We don't realize how expensive the bad food is. It costs 8.7 years of our life. And we have to, there are certain foods, and go to prescriptionslife.com and read about these six foods we shouldn't be eating, the ones mm-hmm. that cause this buildup.
Dr. Richard Furman, he's a medical doctor, he's a vascular surgeon. His new book is called Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Live Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer. Don't try to say that too fast. Dr. Furman, the three simple strategies that your book outlines, tell us a little bit about those three strategies.
Well, there are three lifestyles that we can control and what we do. One is the food we eat, food we don't eat. The other is getting to an ideal weight. We can control our weight, although most of us don't realize that two-thirds of Americans are either overweight or obese. And then the other part is exercise, developing a personal exercise program. And Prescription for Life takes you through how to build strength in your heart, but it also points out that even walking briskly 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, is a thousandfold better than sitting on a couch.
Dr. Furman, I was struck by your comments a few moments ago about measuring our lives not just in terms of the quantity of the years, but the quality of the time that we have here on Earth. And we live in an era where even our U.S. federal government has begun to say, hey, listen, there comes a point where somebody else determines that the quality of your life is just not good. You've reached a chronological age that you're probably not going to live much longer, or your physiological condition is such that we don't think you'll live much longer. So healthcare services and resources are scarce. We need to ration them. At some point, you just need to be willing to die, and you need to plan the end of your life rather than seeking more treatment to sustain your life. How do you respond to that from your perspective?
Well, again, that whether we're talking about Alzheimer's or heart attacks or whatever, dementia, there's so much of that often that we can prevent. And that's what the encouragement is. If the government's headed in that direction, we can buy 7 to 12 years before we ever get to those definitions that the government's putting in of diseases or problems that we get into. Prevention is the big issue.
Dr. Furman, I am struck, and I hope I'm seeing this clearly, but I'm struck by the number of churches and people within the Christian community that are saying, you know, we've got a role to play here with prevention. And I know at my church, for example, there is a team of nurses and a couple of physician's assistants who voluntarily take blood pressure and do blood pressure checks and advise people on, as a nutritionist that's a part of the team in our church, that just they all came together voluntarily under the direction of our pastor and advise people for free on how to eat more healthy, how to exercise and take better care of ourselves. Do you believe that the Christian community is awakening to this and playing more of an active role in this process?
Oh, yeah, it is. And you realize that our most prized possession is what the Lord has given us, our body. And so many people just don't take care of it. And that you're hitting it the nail on the head. I think as a Christian, we ought to do everything we can to keep ourselves as healthy and vivacious as we can as a platform to be able to witness to other people. And I think the fact that your church is even interested in this, I would encourage everybody there to read Prescription for Life, because it explains this. All it is the review of the medical literature written in layman terms. So it explains. So many people try to lose weight. They go on a fad diet, and you can lose a lot of weight that way. But then the saddest words in the medical literature is that only 2 to 12% are able to keep that sustained weight loss off. And Prescription for Life gives that secret of how to do that. As I would encourage people to go to prescriptionforlife.com and get started on practicing their eating lifestyle as they lose their weight, so when they get to their ideal weight, they're going to be able to continue that same lifestyle of eating.
Prescription for Life, 3 simple strategies to live younger, longer. Dr. Richard Furman, MD, its author. Dr. Furman, thanks very much. Let's continue this conversation another time. We appreciate you being with us this morning.
Okay. Appreciate the invitation. Thank you, Matt.
7:45, it's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues. It's 7:47 on the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your support. We are fully listener-supported. We can't do it without you. Join us. Come on board with us. Find us at myfaithradio.com anytime, 24-7, myfaithradio.com. You can subscribe to podcasts of all our programs, find text and audio content with the guests that we interview each and every day here on Faith Radio. It's myfaithradio.com. By the way, a very intriguing conversation with Dr. Richard Furman, MD, just moments ago. He is a vascular surgeon by profession. And he's written this, what appears to me to be a very insightful book. What I've read of it is very, very enriching content indeed. It's called Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer. And if you were with us in the previous segment, he was kind of laying out the fact that, hey, the church has a role to play in terms of preventing disease and encouraging people, enabling people to live healthier lifestyles. Tell you what, we have a copy of the book why don't we do this? We'll do a drawing for this. If you would like to receive a copy of this, give us a call right now at 877-933-2484. Just real simple. We'll take your name and number and enter you into a drawing. And then after the news at 8 o'clock, we will draw a winner and notify the winner. It's a copy of the book, Prescription for Life, Three Simple Strategies to Live Younger, Longer. A brand new book from Dr. Richard Furman, MD, 877-933-2484. If you'd like to get registered to win that book, and again, we'll do the drawing at the top of the hour. So go ahead and make that call. Just think of it this way. How perfectly would this fit into, say, a church library? If there's a library at your church where people can go and check out books and audio recordings, videos, those kinds of things, sure, I understand we share and consume and sell and transport books and audio and video through the internet these days, but some of us are still into hard copy. Imagine that. Some of us still like the printed paper. Some of us still, this will be a shock to my son's generation, I know, some of us still like content on compact discs. That's what CD stands for if you're in my son's generation. Anyway, I'm dating myself, I realize, but give us a call, 877-933-2484. We'll draw a winner for Dr. Furman's book, a copy of it, coming up after the news at 8 o'clock. Hey, while you're online, make sure to navigate over to myfaithradio.com. Register your pastor to be chosen to win a very, very nice gift. Sunscape Retreats, which is a nonprofit ministry, nonprofit group, they have partnered with us to get the good word out about what they do. Sunscape Retreats is a nonprofit group that they own and operate a couple of different retreat centers. We've got info about this organization, by the way, on our website at myfaithradio.com. But Sunscape Retreats, they have a couple of beautiful retreat centers, one in rural Tennessee, the other in a rural part of Colorado, and they customize a retreat experience for people who actually serve full-time in ministry. Pastors, yes, but also those who head up nonprofit parachurch ministries and other kinds of ministry organizations. Sunscape Retreats caters to their needs as well. Obviously, it's not all free. This is financially, these things are enabled with people's charitable donations. But Sunscape, they customize a retreat experience for people who serve in ministry and allow people to step away from their ministerial callings for a period of time. And they customize this experience so as to be restorative and rejuvenating and strengthening and kind of rebuild people from the ground up. Let them unplug and address maybe some family problems if there are any, or marital problems if there are any, but come out of that experience refreshed, renewed, and ready to get to work again. That's what they do at Sunscape Retreats. We're going to give away one of those experiences in a drawing at the end of October. So if you just navigate over to our website, we don't try to collect a whole bunch of personal data on you. We will need some, but nominate the pastor of your church, and we'll draw a winner for this 8-day retreat experience for a pastor and the pastor's family. Will do that at the close of October. It's Pastor Appreciation Month, all month long in the month of October, and we invite you to do that. Some of the things that we are hearing are just kind of overwhelming in a very, encouraging sort of the way. Some of the things that people are saying about the pastor of their church as they nominate their pastor to win this retreat experience, just tremendous. And, boy, if we did this all the time, consistently, on an ongoing basis, what a difference we could make in the life of the church universally, but even in the functioning of our individual local church bodies and in the lives of pastors and their families. And one of the things that I see, I've read a whole bunch of the, I don't see the personal data, that's outside of my purview, but I see some of the synopsis, if you will, some of the descriptions that people are offering of their pastors. one of the things that I see over and over again is this recognition among church parishioners that, hey, you know what, the pastor's spouse, they are everyday folks committed to serving, yes, and called to fulfill some very unique functions in the church, but they're everyday folks. They've got families, and as a result, they're sinners. Their families are problematic, just like ours. They've got issues, and we accept that, and we graciously try to encourage them to work through those issues. But we sure appreciate what they do. They are there for us, and we want to be there for them. I think that's a very healthy and very appropriate approach to the pastor of our church. Anyway, get over to myfaithradio.com, nominate your pastor. We will draw a winner at the end of the month, and that's a very good thing. Also, as I've said this before, but it bears repeating. We talked a lot about this yesterday here in our program, and I mentioned this last hour. If you are a pastor or if you are involved in a church community and you know somebody in your local church that is a business owner of any sort, frankly, we don't care how big or how small that business is. If you know somebody who is engaged in the enterprise of business, would you please have that individual get to myfaithradio.com and participate in what we are calling our Business Owners Survey. Myself and Dick Whitworth, our Vice President and General Manager, Neil Stavem, our Program Director here at Faith Radio, Bill English, a great friend to us here at Faith Radio and the publisher of BibleInBusiness.com, and a whole bunch of very thoughtful, scholarly people at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, they put together this this survey, and we're trying to ascertain what are the greatest struggles, what are the greatest victories, what are the needs and interests of business owners in our community. Now, you might say, well, why is the Christian Radio Network concerned about businesses in local communities? Great thing, but why would Christians be involved with this? I ask a different question. I ask, how in the world can we not care about these things? Economic well-being impacts every area of our lives, our families, and even the functioning of the church. And the economic well-being of our country, of our culture, of our society rests on the foundation of small business. You may not believe that. You may not think that's necessarily the case. But the foundation of our economy is not the government itself. The foundation is for-profit, locally owned and operated business entities. The vast majority of jobs that exist in the country come from businesses, for-profit businesses, that are, by definition, small businesses. And what's the definition of a small business? Well, any business that employs fewer than 500 people, by most people's definition, is a small business. Now, that's quite an array, right? You may have a company that employs one or two people. You may have a chain of stores in the local area where you live that employs 499 people. Huge gulf of difference between the two, right? But this is how important, this is what a broad and diverse topic we're discussing here, right? So please send your business owner friends over to our website, myfaithradio.com, and have them fill out. It take them all of maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 at the most, but have them fill out our business owner survey. We want to know what they are thinking. It's 7:56. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Seven 7:57 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. I am honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. Coming up on our program tomorrow, our great friend George Frazier, who hosts Real Recovery, he's the co-host of that program, Sunday evenings on the Faith Radio Network. George Frazier, a professional by profession and addictions counselor, he'll join us as we talk about the ongoing effort to get those who are trapped in the very, very lonely place of an addiction, get them acquainted with the saving grace of our Lord. George Frazier joining us coming up tomorrow on our program. Also, the pastor's perspective on the threat of arrests of pastors in both Houston, Texas, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. We'll get somebody, we'll have you meet somebody who is an expert in the law as it pertains to the practice of religious liberty. We'll talk about that coming up tomorrow on the program. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6. Keep it right here on this, the Faith Radio Network. Measure, 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 measure. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com.